Welcome to the podcast series for HAP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Kehan. Today, we'll discuss the article by Yamaguchi et al. Titled, Cardiac Hypertrophy Associated with Impaired Regulation of Cardiac Ryanodine Receptor by Calmodulin and S100A1. This article published online May 10, 2013. My guests today are Associate Editor Gil Weir, Lead Author Gerhard Meissner, and expert Peter Mueller. Let's get started.
Thanks, Kara. Well, of course, there's a large amount of evidence that abnormal ryanodine receptor function is involved in cardiomyopathy, cardiac hypertrophy, and heart failure. And it's also known that ryanodine receptor channels are normally inhibited by the binding of calcium calmodulin, and this inhibition occurs at both the normal low calcium during diastole and the higher systolic calcium. Gerhard and his colleagues have reported previously that mice in which calmodulin inhibition of ryanodine receptors has been ablated completely have severe cardiac hypertrophy and die very early. So inhibition of ryanodine receptor channels by calmodulin appears to be absolutely critical for normal cardiac function, possibly somehow preventing cardiac hypertrophy. In the work we're discussing today, the authors have made real progress, I think, in determining the exact amino acid involved, and indirectly at least, in determining the calcium dependence of the pathological effects of loss of calmodulin inhibition of ryanodine receptors. So, Gerhard, would you take us now through some of the key details of the work?
Now, we have now created two mouse models to study the role of calmodulin inhibiting the cardiac ryanodine receptor. And in one of the earlier models referred to the ADA mouse, we inhibited calmodulin regulation at both diastolic and systolic calcium. And the second model described in the recent AGE paper, inhibition of the ryanodine receptor was impaired at diastolic calcium only. And creation of the two mouse models was based on two observations. The first one was that in single-channel measurements, calmodulin increased the duration of the closed state, which suggested to us that calmodulin has an important role in the termination of calcium release. And the second one was that three mutations in the calmodulin binding domain impaired calmodulin inhibition at both diastolic and systolic calcium, whereas a single amino acid substitution impaired calmodulin inhibition only at diastolic calcium. And studies with our two mouse models showed that CAM inhibition at systolic calcium is important for normal cardiac function. And this is an unexpected finding because a common theme in the literature is that leaky calcium channels at diastolic calcium are associated with cardiac diseases. And probably a second interesting finding is that a second calcium binding protein, S100A1, appears to have only a very limited role in regulating the cardiac ryanodine receptor.
Thanks, Gerhard. So, Peter, as expert reviewer here, what is your perspective on this work?
I found this work incredibly interesting for two reasons, beyond the fact that work from this lab is always incredibly quantitative and thorough. The first is that this is a really excellent example of the complex and fluid relationship of signaling within the cardiomyocyte. Even 10 years ago, we could have more imagined protein-protein interactions like ornaments on a Christmas tree that are incredibly static, incredibly stable. But these findings and, you know, findings of other work now really demonstrate in vivo how naive these assumptions were. In this case, Gerhard and his group used four players, the ryanodine receptor, calcium, calmodulin, and S100A1, and show how quickly these interactions can change based on the local environment and how really these protein-protein interactions are not really all interrelated, and how they can move around and very quickly not only change the local milieu, but really what's happening in the global heart. The second thing that I really loved about this paper is how it's really an elegant tool for teaching the trainees in my lab and postdocs and fellows of how a group pursues an interesting hypothesis. And this goes well beyond this paper to where Gerhard and colleagues made an observation years ago about how a single mutation in a hex cell in an in vitro assay might affect how calmodulin binds to the ryanodine receptor.
Thanks, Peter. One of the questions I had for you, Gerhard, was, would a simple rightward shift in the open probability curve account for the loss of CAM-mediated inhibition at low calcium?
Yes, I think there's another aspect that is important, and that is that the calcium-free and the calcium-bound calmodulin probably bind to different regions of the calmodulin binding domain, and that at least has been shown for the skeletal muscles in our calcium release channel. So I think certainly the affinity change, and that's about a tenfold increase, at least tenfold increase in the calcium calmodulin binding to the receptor in the presence of calcium, certainly has a role. But probably more important is that the two forms bind to different regions of the receptor, and thereby introducing different amino acid substitutions, you either eliminate the calcium-bound form or the calcium-free bound form.
Mm, I see. That's a fascinating explanation. I did have one other question. Being a calciumologist, naturally, I think in terms of the calcium. I'm just wondering whether the channels that have lost the calmodulin inhibition at diastolic calcium, do we know whether or not calcium actually becomes significantly elevated during diastole in those types of use?
We have not really measured resting calcium in cardiomyocytes in these cells, but now we have found that at least in single channel measurements, again, calmodulin fourfold inhibits the open channel probability at low diastolic calcium. And therefore, now we basically probably create a modestly leaky calcium channel at diastolic calcium in the absence of calmodulin. Whether this is really a determining factor, we really don't know. We really believe it's a binding of calmodulin at systolic calcium that is of critical importance. Yes. For normal cardiac function.
Just to jump in on that question to follow up, obviously, you know, these molecules have been implicated not only in structural disease, but also in electrical disease. And just to expand on Gil's question, have you thought or do you have any further insight into some of the electrical phenotypes that might be happening in these mice, in, not only in the ventricle, but also with recent findings for calcium regulation of the ryanodine receptor in atria and sinus node?
Well, we really haven't done any these studies, but there's a recent paper by the Moore Laboratory who have done some electrophysiological studies with isolated cardiomyocytes. And they observe, for instance, relatively long but less frequent calcium sparks. And they also see spontaneous releases, which seem to increase sodium calcium currents, which they suggest maybe indicate some arrhythmogenic behavior, which maybe contribute to the death of the mice. And these are studies done again with the mice that show a strong cardiac hypertrophy phenotype.
Perhaps you could comment on just one more issue that I found of interest in the paper. You did look at changes in gene expression in this model, and obviously that's a key component of the hypertrophy. So could you tell us a little bit more about what the results were and what your thinking is on that?
We have now observed some upregulation of the ERK and P90 RSK pair phase. And more recent studies, unpublished studies, have suggested that there's an upregulation of growth signals. And we also have carried out some microarray data. And they show that in the embryonic heart at day 16.5, there are a large number of genes already upregulated or downregulated on the order of more than 100 in each direction. So there occurs already a massive alteration in gene expression at a very early stage in the heart. Even so, at that stage, we don't see any increase in heart size.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
So there are a number of very early events. Normally, the people have shown that cardiac renin receptor function starts around day 10 to 9. So within 6 days, there occurs already a major reprogramming. But how this translates really into specific signaling pathways, that's certainly something we would like to find out.
All right, so would you identify that as the sort of key question going forward in these studies?
Uh-huh. Yeah, that would be the key emphasis in our laboratory. I think calcium signaling is a little more difficult for our lab because we're not really having the appropriate equipment.
Okay, well, thanks, Gerhard and Peter, for that very interesting discussion, and congratulations once again to you, Gerhard, on a really very elegant piece of work.
Thank you very much.
Kara?
You've been listening to an AJP Heart and Circ podcast. For more podcasts, visit us online at ajpheart.physiology.org. Thank you.